You are listening to WWBC Coco, Merritt Island, 1510 AM, as well as W234BI Coco, Rockledge, 94.7 FM, W264AS, Rockledge, Melbourne, Palm Bay, Indy Atlantic, Indian Harbor Beach, Satellite Beach, 100.7 FM, and W260CL, Coco, 99.9 FM.
Hello, space and treasure coast. This is Sita Begee on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends right here on AM 1510, WWBC, FM 94.7, 99.9, 100.7. And boy, this is the last show for 2021 on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends. I just can't believe another year went by, and it's been amazing.
It has been. We've met so many fantastically talented people, so many people involved in nonprofits and so many things that are bettering our community and like making such a difference in the world. It's amazing, Sita. And you've met all of them. You know, there's a whole big downplay to Facebook, right? Everybody's like, oh, the negativity and stuff. I don't see any negativity coming from you on Facebook because you like meet a million people on there. And much to today's guest, you got somebody calling in from Tel Aviv.
Yeah.
She radiates positivity.
It's unbelievable.
So our show is also heard on WWBC Live all over the world. And Miss Samantha, put the link here for my friend to give to his friends in Tel Aviv to listen to. If not, Ellen can do it.
It's 1510wwbc.com. You just log in there on the website, and then you'll be able to click the on-demand button or the listen live button. You may have to download something real quick, but for the most part, it's just a really easy push button to be able to do that. As a matter of fact, anybody from here, any from Brevard County, you can listen in on 99.
Yes,
go ahead, do the radio calls.
That's right. You go ahead and put that in there because they're going to have to listen exactly how to get on and click listen and all that.
I will. I'll put
so
right in there for
on
you.
Mondays for the last, I want to say the last 11 years, we've sat in a studio. We were in another studio before, which shall remain nameless before Paul just says, vamos, we won't. And we're in this nice studio with like five or six mics. There's tons of areas here for people to have different shows. And we talk about things that are going on right here in Brevard County, Florida. We talk about things that are going on around the world, in the nation of the United States. I mean, and the thing is, for me, my whole thing is everyone should wake up every day and, yes, be positive, be grateful that we're breathing, and give the world our best. And one of the ways that I think we do that is by staying involved in our communities, no matter where we live. You wake up every day, you want to function in road, you want to function in society, you want a school for your children, you want food on the table, you want people to have health care, you want them to have an affordable wage and a home. And those things are possible here in the United States because we vote. And we vote for politicians who actually care about these issues. And so for me, you're right. I do meet a lot of positive people. And one of the people that I met, you know, over the years through my Democratic connections is a gentleman named Imran Siddiqui. And I really, really like everything about him, his family, how he gives back to the United States, makes us immigrants look good, because that's what I think. When we immigrate to the United States, we give back. And Imran serves as the Associate Vice President at Broward College, overseeing Employment Solutions and BCEX. I'll have to ask him what that is. He's on the phone, so he's hearing me. Prior to joining Broward College, Imran had an extended career as a political operative. He's a strategist and a startup founder. His political career reflects a commitment to grassroots organizing, civic engagement, and voting rights. He spent from 2012 through 2020 election in leadership roles as a voter protection staffer in Broward and Palm Beach counties. And he had the honor, actually, Ellen and Samantha, of working on a razor-thin campaigns of Charlie Crist, Andrew Gillum, for governor, Barack Obama, Hillary Clinton, and most recently, Joe Biden's campaign for president. And this is such an extensive bio, and it speaks volumes of the human being who's on the other end of the phone. So I'm going to have him join us on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends and chat with us a little bit. So, Imran, thank you so much for taking the time to call in.
Good afternoon. Thanks for having me, Sita, and friends.
Yeah, I know that you're on vacation with your family, and I should have actually asked Paul to just do a rerun of today, but for some reason, my car just drives to the station every Monday and sits here, and we just do our thing, so thank you. So tell us a little bit more about yourself. I didn't want to go into all the details, but you're amazing, and you're just one of those people that I wish everyone were like you.
Oh, thank you so much. That's very kind of you, and no, it's a pleasure to be here, and I'm more than happy to take time to join you all. I appreciate the work that you do. So, I'm at Broward College. Essentially, my job here is to get students not just jobs, but careers. So connecting our students to well-paying positions within the local business economy, and BCEX is our business accelerator. So not just students, anyone, you, me, anybody in the community, faculty, staff, if they want to build a business or a startup, we offer a fully free accelerator that me and my team build and we're very proud of. So just wanted to get that plug in there. But prior to joining Broward College, I had I did about a decade working within specifically the realm of democratic politics at the intersection of essentially legal and political organizing. So my background's in law. I practiced for a couple of years and then shifted full-time into campaign work. It was a very rewarding experience, and, you know, you do it for long enough, and then I dived into this amazing world of higher ed, where we're doing really great things at Broward College as well.
Yeah, and that's quite a transition for you, right? Because you were involved in all the campaigns, and then you were in practice in law, and then I see you just had an addition to your family. And so is it because you wanted to be more centered around the family? Because you have done a lot. And, you know, behind every great man, there's a great woman. And your wife has really stood by you while you did all these things. So what was that? What caused you to make this change?
Yeah. Well, you mentioned the little one. Actually, today is her first birthday. So
happy
birthday to little Layla. Yeah. So we're going to have a little, you know, a little safe get together with my mom and my brother and our immediate family. But no, I mean, for sure, my wife, she's a physician in Palm Beach County. She's in leadership over at JFK Medical Center in JFK North, and she does incredible work as a frontline physician. She's been managing the COVID response since all this started. So essentially working a couple of years with no break, right?
I didn't know how you did it because you kept your family intact, which I really admire you for that, too. And I think a lot of that is cultural as well, because a lot of us, we know how to keep that family together because we know we're doing something for the common good, right?
That's right. Yeah, I mean, that's, I think, what kept us going is it has not been easy, obviously. She has a very busy career. I have a busy career. We have three kids. We have a mom that's nearby. You know, we have our community friends and obligations. But, you know, you want to always, one, keep working hard. I think what we have earned and inherited either as immigrants or children of immigrants is a very strong work ethic and a very mission-minded approach to life, right? So you remember every day, even when, you know, they're long and you're up till like last night till 11 or 12 decorating the house, and my wife had to get up at 6 this morning to head back to the hospital. You know, you grind because there's that bigger calling and the bigger mission, and I think that's essentially what could explain that transition from doing campaign work, where I organized volunteer attorneys and I worked in the voting rights realm, and then there came the opportunity to make an impact as a strategist and a program builder within higher ed at Broward College, where we're doing really great work bringing education to our hardest hit zip codes of lowest education attainment, highest unemployment, in a landmark program called Broward Up. And so we're doing really good work. So for me, it was really an extension of that mission, an extension of that community-facing work. And I'm really grateful to be at the college, and I'm really enjoying my time there.
Yeah, and a lot of things happen when you're a volunteer and you're an organizer in the community, because you end up actually speaking with people, and you hear their stories, and you hear, you know, their hardships and struggles and challenges, and you get to a point where you do understand that not everyone was born with the same opportunity. And I think for us, for you and I, you know, people of Indian, Pakistani, you know, us kind of people, we're kind of born with this, go out and give the world your best. And, you know, they teach you doctor, lawyer, engineer, businessman, whatever, be somebody, right? But a lot of cultures, a lot of people don't have those mentors. They don't have people in their world, in their lives, to say, you are somebody, you do belong, and this is how you can do it. So I'm so grateful that you're doing this and you're bringing your experience and expertise to Broward College and to the people that you're going to be serving.
Oh, no, I appreciate it. That's really, really kind, and I really appreciate the high praise that you're sharing. But I agree with you. I think it just comes down to, you know, a commitment, a work ethic, and just looking to make an impact. Doing something beyond yourself, doing something that improves not just your net worth or not just your own life, but how can you amplify your impact, you know, with the limited time that we all have, right, on this planet. So,
oh my gosh, I say that every day. It's just an earthly vacation, and I don't think a lot of people understand that our body is only here for limited time, and it's all about that dash, right? The day you were born and the day you leave the earth. So, so how can we get more people to be like you and I and Samantha and Ellen and all of us who actually wake up every day and say, look out world, here I come? How do we get more people involved in civic engagement, in voting?
Well, I think a lot of it comes to exposure. You know, in 2007, I was on a very small team that built a nonprofit civic engagement organization that has since, you know, it's grown quite a bit. And so the root of my activism began in civic engagement. And it means a lot to me. And from my own experience, it's been getting folks educated on the system, which can sometimes be overwhelming given their daily demands, right? Folks have families and jobs, and maybe they don't have the time or the bandwidth or the initial interest in learning about the structure of their city government and how they can make an impact, or how far, honestly, contribution can go towards building a relationship with a local elected official who are the ones who are making decisions when it comes to parking lots and roads and our temples and our mosques and our churches and our synagogues. These are people that matter, or what it takes to get involved to the point where more folks from our communities are active enough to actually run for office. And so for me, it's always been, listen, I know there's always a certain segment of the population that will not be interested, but I try to be more optimistic and focus on those I think are swayable. And in my experience, it's been exposure, it's been education. And then when folks realize, you know, we're very fortunate to live in the country that we live in, where we have a voice. A lot of us come from countries where you're incentivized to keep your head down, and you're incentivized not to make noise. But, you know, this is a great country, this is a great nation that actually says, listen, you know, your rights are protected and you're encouraged to have an opinion. And so once we go to our communities, that can sometimes be a little bit more shy and a little bit more nervous to say certain opinions publicly. And then we say, listen, you know, that's what this country is about. You know, bring your opinion and bring that passion forward. And these are tangible 1, 2, 3 steps of how you can do it. The results have been very positive. So
yeah,
obviously it all starts with voting, getting involved in voting consistently. And then I think once folks get involved at that level, then following the news and following that passion, that just, it flows from there.
Right. And a lot of it is it's cultural as well, because I know, like, if I attend a party with people from the Caribbean or India or, you know, just Americans, wherever, and then all of a sudden you start up a conversation, the conversation can go in a direction of, like, you know, well, maybe somebody's buying a home. You start talking about mortgages. You start talking about loans. You start talking about the neighborhood. You start talking about crime. You start talking about the schools. And before you know it, you're actually having a political discussion without the people actually knowing it. And I find that I do inspire people and say, well, did you vote? And then they'll say yes or no. And then I'm like, well, then you can't complain if you don't vote, because that's the only voice that we actually have to make a difference. And, you know, it bothers me that there are so many people that are registered to vote, but they don't exercise that right. And I always wonder, what can we do to get those people off their couches or even to vote by mail? What is it? And I think the immigrant community are guilty of this as well.
And the Hispanic community as well, big time. I was wanting to ask him, what do you feel one of the best ways to reach out, Hispanic outreach, especially when it comes to campaign season? I ran in 2020 and I felt that we were very overlooked. Not a focus. Didn't feel like our vote counted the way it really, truly should.
Yeah. Well, first off, and I'm sorry, what's your name, ma'am?
Samantha.
The candidate. Samantha, nice to meet you.
Nice to meet you.
Absolutely. I mean, look, I think a common refrain, right, and I think a fair criticism of Democratic campaigns has been that we engage our voters way too late, and we engage our Democratic constituencies, especially our minority communities, a little bit too late in the process. And I think that it's become, there have been enough cycles of this that I think it's become obvious, right? So one, I would recommend, right, my strategist had back on, is engaging early, of leveraging our nonprofits that work in this space to do the year-round work that they're already doing. But also, the messaging needs to be relatable to our communities. We're not, you know, there are overlapping interests, whether they be Indian or Hispanic or Black or Pakistani or whatever. Communities broadly, right? Generally family-oriented people, generally, you know, not super liberal always on every issue, right? Have some conservative tendencies, but have their own interests that are specific to their community. So, you know, tailoring that message has not been a strong point, and I think it's something that many campaigns are working on. But really, it's a matter of, I think, to get folks interested is tying the impact of their vote, right? Like, it actually matters. And I think a lot of people, they see the magnitude of these elections and they think of the hundreds of thousands or the millions of votes, if you're talking about presidential, and they just feel overwhelmed and they say, listen, my vote is not going to make a difference. But if you look at our state, and this is a great line that any of us can use, in all of our previous midterm and presidential, our races have generally, except for the last one, came out at 3%, which is still pretty close, but they've always been around 1.5 to 2.5%. And when you aggregate that out by precinct, it's literally 1 to 2 votes per polling site.
Yeah.
Which is like, it's just unbelievable, right? And if that doesn't move folks, right, let's forget about the governor's race or the presidential race. There are races in your neighborhood that affect your life. Like I mentioned,
absolutely,
your city or county commissioners.
Right. That's what we ran for.
Yeah.
Yeah, like the city council. So, Imran, you know, I'm glad you touched on messaging, because messaging, whether you're messaging in your home with your children, whether you're messaging with a spouse, whether you're messaging with your neighbors, it's all about how we say things, when we say it, to whom we say it, and how we say it, right? And I think Democrats do have that problem, because I remember when the words defund the police and socialists came out, I kept saying, nobody wants to defund the police. We need the police. What we're saying is, put some money, some resources into communities. And when we talk about socialism, we say, hey, wait a minute. No, no, no. If you make a lot of money and you pay your fair share of taxes, that money goes into the roads and the postal service and the schools and the hospitals. And you don't know when you're going to have an aunt or a grandmother on Medicaid. You don't know when somebody's going to need a hospital bed. So I think the Democrats are so slow in having like a rapid response team that says, wait a minute, stop. And the Republicans, they just run away with these words and they keep going and going and going until, I believe, in my humble opinion, the Democratic Party needs to do more to actually engage people in how to message. What do you think about that?
Yeah, I mean, look, I mean, when it comes down to these campaigns, I mean, I would say, you know, both parties do the messaging that they need to use to motivate and animate their sides, right? And I would certainly say I agree. I think on the Democratic side, it's certainly been more reactive, less proactive. And if you look at, you know, if you look at generally the broad swath of both parties, you're talking about the vast majority of folks, especially here in Florida, if you look at the numbers, the raw numbers, you have folks that are mostly center left, center right, or right in the middle. And I think most people are tired of the extremist rhetoric, you know, when it comes to any policy. And my hope, and I think most of our hopes, is that some of this more moderate messaging can actually come to the forefront that is not motivating folks on divisiveness or not motivating voters on their raw emotion or their safety and security, which is not kind of a sentiment you want to really you know, fill your community with anxiety about their security. But, you know, focusing on tangible solutions. And so I think definitely, you know, messaging and branding is a very tough thing to master.
Right. So what you're saying is we should have less division, less people spending fear.
Multicultural.
Yeah. Cool. And because, you know, like I see that a lot. Like all of a sudden we see this thing, war on Christmas. I'm Hindu, right? And I was born and raised in Trinidad and Tobago. And I celebrate Christmas. We celebrate Eid. We celebrate Diwali. Yeah. We celebrate everything. I have never seen anybody in their right mind say, I have a war on Christmas. Like, people wake up on Christmas Day and they know it's all about the Christ, what he did, taking care of the poor, the sick, the needy, yeah, healing people. So when people say the war on Christmas, they're really appealing to the raw emotions of their base. And they're just causing a lot of chaos and shenanigans for no reason. It's like, dude, stop it, you know?
Just enjoy your time with your family and the real meaning behind
the
holiday.
Yeah, there is no war on Christmas. There never was. I see Ellen shaking her head.
Yeah, Christmas is 365 days a year.
It is.
Be
every day you wake up.
Every day
it's
you
a good day.
Up, and it's funny, you should be celebrating whatever it is that you want to celebrate.
We were talking about it with Ellen because she said, again, culturally, you could say Feliz Navidad and nobody looks at you like you have 10 heads, but you say Merry Christmas and people look at you like they want to chop your head off.
I've never seen that, though. When I say Merry Christmas, people smile back.
No, Ellen, I have never had anyone...
That says, but anyway, so for our listeners who are tuning in, we're speaking with Imran Siddiqui, and he is the Associate Vice President, Workforce Education Employment Solutions at Broward College. So Imran, your wife is a physician. I bet you've had quite some discussions about COVID in your household.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I can think back to the very earliest days in February 2020 when it was making its way from China to Europe, and then over here, we saw the first cases rising, and it's been a grind. I have a lot of sympathy and I give a lot of credit to all of our frontliners, and I think a lot of attention goes to the doctors, nurses, and you know, our NPs and PAs. But you know, we also need to think about our janitors and our truck drivers and our cashiers, who were also frontliners throughout the pandemic, because we also had to eat. And we also needed our garbage taken away, and we also needed our goods transported. And so, you know, those folks didn't have a choice to work or not to work.
Yeah.
And so it's been quite the ride now.
Right. And so what do you say to people that says the United States did not handle the pandemic well, or the information they were giving people? Because I tend to think we did really well, but I think certain politicians made it political. But I don't think we handled it badly. I think they were from the beginning telling us to wear a mask. Us in healthcare, some of us had PPE and some didn't, but we got them. But I mean, what do you say to people who thinks the U.S. didn't handle it well?
Oh yeah, I mean, I guess, you know, that's a little bit outside my expertise, but I think overall, look, it was an unprecedented pandemic. I think we were good about relying upon our experts. We still pull from the CDC. I thought Dr. Fauci did a great job keeping the science based in science. And, you know, the politics of it is tricky, but I would say it's a complicated country of a lot of opinions, and so you're not going to have a uniform response always.
That's right.
That everyone agrees with.
And everybody wants a choice, right? Everybody wants a choice, you know, how do you think? So before we close, tell us about some of the exciting things you're doing at Broward College, and what do we have to look forward to for the new year from you?
Well, I would say if anybody is interested in launching a startup or launching a business, it's a fully virtual program. So it's an accelerator. You come in with your idea. We put it through a 12-week process, and you leave with a properly built-out business plan, a startup, a small business, a nonprofit, whatever you want to build. We do it entirely free of charge. We do that with the support of the college and private donors. And I would just say for folks just to stay engaged and keep encouraging their family and friends to stay engaged.
Yeah, I am so proud of you, and I'm proud to call you my friend, and I do follow you on Facebook with the family, and I try to wake up every day and be optimistic and positive and share my culture and my husband's culture from Iran with my friends and family. And I'll tell you, a lot of people would say, well, I didn't know much about the Iranian culture until you started posting about your husband and stuff. And I think it's wonderful that people like us, we are the United Nations. I tell people all the time, I'm Hindu, my husband was raised in the Middle East, my best friend is Jewish, and my children love Jesus. I don't think I could get any more multicultural than that, right?
Exactly. Well, that's it. You got to live it, right? It's more than just talking, and I think you're a good example of that. It's about living and building these authentic relationships with our neighbors, and you know, then the divisiveness and the temperature in the room is easily, you know, brought down when you're, these aren't just abstract ideas and communities. These are people, and you know, wait a minute, you know, that's my friend, that's my neighbor, that's my, you know, my kid's friend, and so it's more difficult to fall into the traditional pitfall. So I think that's great, and I appreciate the example that you're setting.
Well, Imran Siddiqui, thank you so much for calling in. Ellen will take it from here, and I really appreciate you taking the time in the holiday season to call in.
And enjoy the rest of your vacation.
Oh, it's my pleasure, and happy holidays, Merry Christmas to all folks on the call, and Happy New Year to everybody.
All right. Same to you.
So, folks, you're listening to 1510 WWBC here with Viewpoint with Sita and Friends, and we'll be right back right after the station break with hear from our sponsors.
Viewpoint with Sita and Friends is sponsored by the friends and family of Sita Begee, author of 18 Brothers and Sisters, and founder of Simply Sita Skincare, and these great sponsors. Cloud 9 Mattress and Furniture is a family-owned furniture dealer featuring the best and most affordable brands. They offer all servicing for free. Delivery, setup, and home, removal of old furniture, and warranty. Work with a reputable and experienced local business as they strive for excellence with their customers. Scotty's been in the mattress and furniture business for 32 years. You can shop online, call, or stop into the showroom to place an order. They are conveniently located inside the Merritt Square Mall and service all of Brevard County and Central Florida. Super savings sale happening now. That's Cloud 9 Mattress and Furniture, 321-459-2473. Visit them on the web at cloud9furniture.com. Again, 321-459-2473 for Cloud 9 Mattress and Furniture. When you need medical care and need it fast, MedFast Urgent Care is faster and less expensive than emergency rooms. MedFast is open 7 days a week, now with 13 locations, including one in Volusia County. With so many MedFast Urgent Care centers, there is a MedFast near you. MedFast offers top quality care that is close by, and the number is easy to remember. That is 321-MEDFAST. You just call 321-MEDFAST. No one wants to wait in an emergency room for hours and get even sicker when you get the high bill. What you want is medical care fast. That's why you call MEDFAST, where most patients are seen and treated in less than an hour. So when you need medical care fast, call 321-MEDFAST. MedFast. Located in Titusville, Florida, Dixie Crossroads has been serving great tasting seafood, char grilled steaks, prime rib, chicken, fresh salads, and their famous corn fritters for over 31 years. The menu features the very best local shrimp and fish from Port Canaveral and ranges from low cost sandwiches and baskets to high end seafood combos. Visit this Florida favorite at 1475 Garden Street in Titusville. That's Dixie Crossroads, 321-268-5000, 321-268-5000, or visit them on the web at dixiecrossroads.com. Jotkoff Financial Group is a certified public accounting and a registered investment advisory firm with over 30 years of productive relationships with clients. Jotkoff Financial Group can assist you in meeting your accounting, tax, and business consulting and financial planning and insurance needs without expanding your internal workforce. With three locations here in Florida, here in Brevard County, Broward County, and Nassau County, contact Jotkoff Financial Group here in Brevard at 321-984-7345, located at 1122 South Wickham Road in Melbourne. That's Jotkoff Financial Group. On the web, you'll find them at www.jotkoff, that's JOTKOFF.com. Call the professionals at Jotkoff Financial Group today. Champion Home Healthcare, keeping your loved one happy, healthy, and at home. Available at 321-306-2551. Once again, 321-306-2551. Champion Home Healthcare is ACHC accredited and licensed, Medicare certified, and a TRICARE provider. Champion Home Healthcare, 306-2551.
There's something special about the place we call home. It's the place we live our lives, spend time with family and friends, and make our own. At St. Francis Reflections Hospice, we consider it a privilege to care for you wherever your home may be. We put our hands, hearts, and skills into providing high-quality hospice care in your home. To learn more about how we reflect life, love, and compassion, visit www.reflectionslsc.org.
Welcome back, dear listeners. This is Sita Begee on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends right here in sunny Cocoa, Florida. We are on AM 1510 WWBC, FM 94.7, 99.9, 100.7, and we are heard on the World Wide Web all over the universe, like everywhere.
Yeah, 1510 WWBC, you can hit that listen live button and hear us directly live as we're on the air, but also all of our archive shows are on there as well. For the last, believe it or not, there's actually, I think, 2 years worth that are on there, but we have 10 years worth, 12 years worth of shows total. 11?
It's 11. Good. It's great.
It's amazing.
It's good. People who want to go back and listen, they can. And
yeah.
So Ellen and Samantha and I, we sit here on Mondays and we have a fabulous time talking about shows. We don't always agree on things, but we get along really well.
Absolutely.
Agree to disagree, yeah. Right? So anyways, for our listeners who are tuning in, we are... Today, we had a really good segment with Imran Siddiqui, and we spoke a little bit about staying engaged in our civic duty, which is to exercise the right to vote. And I want everybody to know that you all need an anti-Maxine in your family. That is a person in your family that asks you every day, how are you going to raise your kids? How are you going to pay for your mortgages? How are you going to take the kids to school? Who's taking care of them after? And it all comes down to politics, Sam.
Yeah, it does.
It does, right? It comes down to who is helping us raise our children. You know, the employers, are they given health insurance?
It takes
a village.
Do you
have a livable wage, you know? And so I'm just saying that, you know, with the new year in 2020, people need to pay attention because so many states, we are electing people who don't know their head from their toe. They just don't. You look at Facebook and some of the things some of these politicians are saying, and you're like, really? You got elected into the highest office? You know, it's like, dude, come on.
Oh, yeah.
So anyways, but next year, Ellen, we are all hoping that we could put this almost 3 years of the pandemic behind us, right?
Yes.
What are you hoping for the new year, and what did you learn this last year from the pandemic in a couple minutes?
Basically, I learned that I'm not materialistic. I never thought that I was, but realizing that I have everything that I need right at home. Sort of like the Wonderful Life movie, you know, and I realized the connection with my people in general, my family, my friends, is more powerful than anything that I could ever have. So making sure that, you know, I'm reaching out to them, spending a lot more time on the phone, spending a lot more time, you know, reaching out to them and getting more involved in their lives was like the most important thing, something that I had missed out on a long time because I had done the corporate America thing for so long. And, you know, working 15, 17 hours a day, you just don't, you know, you never even think about it because everybody else is doing the same thing. Everybody else is working to make that dollar. And I realized that I can live on a whole lot less than what I thought.
And be a lot happier.
And be a lot happier. And the connection with people is so much more, which is, you know, the sad part is that I also saw the connections kind of falling apart too. So I realized how much more important it was for me to make that connection for me, for my soul, for my being. And music, this year for sure is going to be my year that I'm just going to do music.
Yeah.
I'm not
going to
work a whole lot.
You're following your dreams.
Yeah. Just because it's my give. It's my thing that I give back to people. And, you know, every performance, it's kind of funny. I cry. There's always a song or there's this touching moment or somebody gets
music
engaged
transcends.
or something happens. And I, every single show, I cry. about something.
Right.
That's a good thing, though.
And it's awesome because it's a connection.
I think we have our guest, Dr. Tyler Simmet, who's calling in on his vacation. He's taking the time because my other guest, I could not have him on today. He's not well.
Right.
So Dr. Simmet is on the phone. Simmet, we have to remember to say it correctly.
That's right. And he's so Amit's friend, right?
Absolutely.
Yeah. Ellen is going to introduce you, doctor, really quick.
Yes, we had you on the show one time before. He's got he's in from Baltimore, Maryland. He attended Emory University for his pre-medical undergraduate degree, and he majored in psychology and anthropology. And then he attended medical school at Nova Southeastern University College of Osteopathic Medicine to acquire his
medical degree. You're calling in from Israel today, correct?
I have just finished my quarantine. I am out and about in Israel, yes.
Oh, my
God. Exciting.
So, well, tell us a little bit about where you are right now. Let us at least visualize what's going on over there. Make us feel like we're there with you.
So I actually got here about 8 days ago for my niece's bat mitzvah. I got in a day before they closed the country. So Israel is marking off the red countries and saying that if you're in a country where Omicron is high, you cannot come in. If you do come in, you need to quarantine for 1 week and have a negative PCR test before you can leave. If you do not have your own room, you need to quarantine in a COVID hotel. And they use the Dan Panorama. We have a nice view of the beach. But you're in 300 square feet with a nice view of the beach where you get cold food every day and just get to sit there waiting for the disease to work its way through you. So they're taking it very, very seriously here. They have already mandated a fourth vaccine for anybody 60 and older or anybody obese, infirm, or immune compromised. And they've said you can't fly in or out of red countries. And unfortunately, the USA is a red country. It's a country where Omicron is high. Because we're right now in the fourth wave of COVID, and we're waiting to see what happens with Omicron. We know that the crisis in Omicron is, will people die? And we are seeing Omicron as being a advancement of the COVID infection, where people are getting sick but not dying. It's the virus learning to use people to reproduce itself without killing the people that are hosting it.
Right. They're finding willing hosts too in the people who are not vaccinated and the ones who don't believe in science.
This is definitely a pandemic of the unvaccinated now. I've gotten calls from the ER in Maryland asking if I can come back because they are overwhelmed and don't have a way of dealing with them. But they are admitting people who are unvaccinated because they need oxygen support. People who have been vaccinated have been sent home because they're able to recuperate at home. So there's a dichotomy now in how to respond. But there's still some unknowns.
Yeah. Yeah, and so, I mean, I read yesterday, I got a little email from the World Health Organization, and it said that 89 countries have reported cases of COVID-19, the variant Omicron, as of 16th of December, and it shows that it's spreading way much faster than the Delta variant. But, I mean, why do you think people are still not taking this seriously, doctor? I mean,
because they haven't gotten sick themselves. People are funny. People, they just deny that they are susceptible until they get sick and then they want help. So we know that Omicron is a lot easier to spread. We know that people are going to get sick. But I went for a run this morning after I got out of my quarantine and stopped off at a coffee shop, put my mask on, and the woman at the coffee shop wanted to sell me grapefruit juice with ginger as a cure. And she goes, you can take your mask off, don't worry. And there tends to be just childlike fascination with, I can cure anything, I can, you know, try this. And none of it's proven, none of it is scientific. And while grapefruit juice and ginger sounds pretty good, or the orange and carrot juice, I love it. But it's not helping COVID, it's just a nice glass of juice.
Yeah, it's just making that person feel like they know something that we don't know.
And they get to deny it.
Yeah, yeah. So Dr. Samet, who has to worry right now? Tell us which group of people has to worry right now about the Omicron disinfection.
So the people we're admitting to the hospital. So my view, we live with the flu, and we get along just fine because people aren't admitted to the hospital. We know that COVID, SARS-CoV-2, is 32 times more lethal. 32 times, not 10% more, not 32x. Double it 32 times. People die. The people that we're seeing that get incredibly sick are those who are immune compromised, those who get more than 4 or 5 colds a year, those who can't fight off infection. We're also seeing big people, obese people, get sicker and need hospitalization. So
yeah.
People who have more than two conditions, if you're diabetic and have kidney disease, that's bad. If you have asthma and heart disease, you're likely to be sicker. So two conditions, we call it the Apache score, the acute physiology and chronic disease score. Those people are tending to get sicker and need support in a hospital and are at risk of dying and are at risk of having long COVID, which is looking to be about 2 years of shortness of breath, weakness, inability to function, and just generally being a sick person.
So right now the WHO is recommending that people get vaccinated when it's your turn, keep a safe distance, wear a well-fitting mask, open your windows, wash your hands often, cough or sneeze into your elbow or your tissue. And one of my friends was saying this morning to me that she felt as though the United States had dropped the ball on this, that our government didn't do enough. What do you think about that? Do you think we did enough, or it's just that the politicians divided us with maybe they wanted to, one way or the other, discredit one team or the other?
Prevention never gets any applause, and it still doesn't get applause. People don't value stopping you from getting a disease. So I don't think that our overall plan has been broad enough from the beginning, and I think the education needs to be better. I've changed how I behave now because I watch this every day and I live it and it's my job. I've switched from using a KN95 mask to using an N95 mask. A KN95 are the nice duck bills that have nice cloth that filter out the particles. An N95 is one that closes up to your face so there's no air coming in around it. The N95s are more uncomfortable. I've gotten to say I need to be more uncomfortable because COVID season is January to June. That's when it's going to be worst. That's when we're going to be seeing the most spread. And that's when we also need to be the most cautious. So while I don't like having the stuff on my nose, and it does feel uncomfortable, and I do have some skin dryness, it's worth taking the extra step right now because you're walking into the fire. And I think we need to get people to understand. And my feeling is we need to mandate what's going on. I think the CDC has not been supported by our government because their advice is science-based, it's good, and it's really been pretty conservative in that they've tried to give people as much leeway as possible. And they're still not being advanced and supported by our government.
Yeah, and that's very sad for people like us because, I mean, in nursing, and as you know, even in with the physicians, we always relied on the CDC. And to see people bashing the CDC, it is mind-boggling. It's like, I just don't know how to say to them, no, you can't do that. There are scientists working at the CDC to help us, the American people. Why don't you listen? You know?
I agree, and I think the people on the bottom of the class don't like the people at the top of the class. The Epidemiologic Intelligence Service, the EIS, are the brightest people in America, the hardest working people in America. They're crazy nerds who work nonstop. No one likes them. They're going to have the right answer, and people are just going to resent it. But their right answer can save your life.
And you have to realize they are doing work for us, and they can tell us what to do to prevent disease. But the reason is an inroad for people to deny it is they have changed what they've said. And I expect another change, because right now they're telling people test 5 days after exposure, which is basically from the Delta virus. The Omicron virus, it may need to be tested sooner. You may need to test 3 days or 2 days after exposure. And I think it's going to be quicker. I think we're going to get answers better and more rapidly. But I also think that part of the spread is that the virus is spreading quicker, and it's person to person. The other thing that I like sharing with people is that there's a viral load. If someone breathes right in your face without a mask, you're going to get a heavy load of virus if they have it. If they have it and they wear a mask and they breathe on you, you're going to get a lighter load and have a lower level of illness. You're not going to be as sick. So masks work. If people want to argue that it doesn't, they're arguing from a position of weakness, and they're giving you an opinion that's not backed up by fact. No one but your parent is going to believe you or support you because of what you're saying. And your mom and dad might love you, your mom and dad might support you, but we're still in a crisis. And shape up and do what's right.
Yeah. So Doctor, what you're saying is, for our listeners who are tuning in, we're speaking with Dr. Tyler Sammet. And we're speaking about this new strain of this virus, the Omicron. So tell us, so you're saying that the people who are obese, unvaccinated,
immunocompromised,
they're the ones that have to be careful. What about the people who've had COVID two or three times and are not vaccinated? Should we be concerned about those people?
Less worried, but still concerned. And one of the one of my differentiating points, most kids get 6 colds a year. Most adults get 2 colds a year. If you generally got more than 2 colds a year, you're somebody who's doesn't have a strong immune system. You're not fighting things off. You're going through the process of getting infected. So if you have more than 2 colds a year, if you call in sick more than twice a year, you probably need to worry. You're probably more likely to get it. If your kids are sick more than 6 times a year with colds, even just runny nose and staying home from school for a day, they likely don't have a strong immune system. We know that 1 in 20 people in America have low immune globulins and can't develop the antibodies long enough to fight it off. And the vaccine may not last as long. Right now, it's 1 out of 100 people in America have had it. And it'll probably be a lot more, a lot quicker. The next 6 months are going to be rough. And big picture, pandemics are 3 to 5 years. We're entering year 3. This is, Omicron is our 4th wave, but we're probably still going to have some tail end of it, and it may last another 2 years. The numbers I also look at are how open are the hospitals. And if I got sick, can an ambulance come and pick me up and take me to a hospital? Those are numbers that are worth watching to know how loose you can be about your mask and going out and eating out.
Yeah, and it says that evidence is showing that the Omicron is spreading faster than the Delta variant. And when you compare it, people are saying, well, they can't tell the difference. What are some of the signs and symptoms that people should be looking out for? Because, I mean, people are now, I guess they're saying, well, I don't know if I have Delta, if I have Omicron.
But if I have a cold.
If I have a cold. But the signs and symptoms should be the same, right? The fever, the chills, body aches and all that. Feel like you're run over by a truck.
So I would, in Maryland and the ER, we're seeing things a little bit differently. We are seeing a milder illness with Omicron. We're not seeing the loss of taste and the loss of smell. We are seeing the shortness of breath, the sore muscles, the mild headache, the mild cough. It's starting to look a lot more like a routine virus, but the shortness of breath does last about 3 months. It is in the lungs with some fluid in the lungs for about 3 months, and we don't know if it'll last longer. So the symptoms you look for, do you feel tired and worn out? And I do think we should be more like Europe, where people get Omicron tests mailed to their house so that people can test themselves. Because I think 3 days after an exposure, if you test negative, you're likely safe to go out. 5 days, according to the CDC right now. And I think it's important to test if you've been exposed. If someone you've hugged or someone you've slept with had COVID, you probably want to quarantine yourself. If you have it, you want to isolate yourself from others, particularly your kids or anybody older or infirm.
Yeah.
So a little bit different. I mean, it's...
Hi, doctor.
People can tell they're sick. Yeah, I'm sorry.
Hi, doc. This is Samantha. How do we know if Omicron is a crisis?
For me, a crisis is when we don't have the means to meet our needs. It's a crisis if the ambulances are too busy to pick you up. If you have to wait 20 minutes for an ambulance, you're in trouble. If the hospital has more people in the waiting room than they have back being seen, that's a crisis. So, I mean, to put things in perspective, the number one reason why people seek medical care in America is to give birth to a child. Most of the time, it's a small percentage of people who are going to seek medical care because they're sick. Most people are healthy all year long. During this pandemic, we're seeing more people sick than we are seeing born.
Wow.
So we're hitting a crisis where this is a big disease. It's really overwhelming our system. I can tell you in Maryland, half the nurses in the state of Maryland did not renew their license. 46,000 people said, this country is crazy. We are not being supported. We're not being given masks. We're not being given the alcohol to do our washes. No one is really supporting us, and they decided to walk away. Our system is starting to crumble.
Well, I can tell you from experience, we've had a lot of our nurses and nursing assistants who've been ill just don't want to be bothered anymore, because sometimes we do feel like we're not appreciated. We've had family members that would come in and boldly say to us, we're not vaccinated, we're not getting the vaccine, we don't believe in Dr. Fauci, we don't believe in the CDC, we don't believe in our government, whatever it is. And they're telling you that to your face after you've just worn a mask for 10 to 12 hours. And that makes us, the healthcare worker, feel like, why am I doing all this to protect your loved one when you don't even care about us? So I think the mindset is, we are doing the best we can, doc. But yes, I see the burnout with the nurses, the nursing assistants, the frontline staff. I even see it with the janitors and the kitchen staff. I always thought that we were in this together and all of us were going to work collectively to be thy brother's keeper, so to speak, and all of us look out for each other. But I don't know what has happened, that people have decided that their body, their choice means more to them than our bodies, our choice collectively, you know?
Well, I tend to think that people should have freedom to make decisions, but in a crisis, we need to come together. This is a disaster. This is a crisis. Nurses are now seeing twice as many patients per shift as they did before, being paid the same, not being appreciated, and really they are putting themselves at risk. We know hundreds of healthcare providers who have gotten sick. We know hundreds of people in the hospital who have died. And then people say, well, they died because of something else, or they just wanted to say Omicron because it's sexy. No, they're dead. This is stupid. When people are dying, and someone who's never seen them and never tested them knows better than everyone else, that's magical thinking. That's denial. It's just wrong. And you really are disrespecting the healthcare professional, the healthcare system, science, for your own selfishness and projection, your own defense mechanisms that are ignoring what's going on, to really feel like you can come up with an answer on your own without doing the hard work that it takes. But I want to bring this back to the nurses, because they have borne the brunt of the illness, and they've seen more, they've cared for more, and they've watched people deteriorate. unable to help them and unable to get the support from outside. So I think what's going on in the nursing community is really a sign that the system is crumbling.
Yeah, and you know what? You know what we're seeing, Doctor. Too, we only have 3 minutes. We're seeing that a lot of people are concerned about the long haulers. Like now, the concern is what's going to happen with the long haulers if somebody catches the strain of the Omicron. You want to talk a little bit about that with the last 2 minutes we have, because we're not sure what's coming next.
So we're about 2 years we're about 2 years into this, and we're still seeing people ill. The long haulers, we know that people have been sick for a long time. We know that anxiety, stress affects the human body. We're still trying to tease out how much of this is the fluid pooling in the lungs from Omicron or from COVID, how much of this is the swelling of the muscles, and how much of this is the shaming of people with COVID, the separation of them, the anxiety that you create in the uncertainty. I guess what I'm trying to say nicely is I don't know. I know that people have been sick for 2 years and they're still sick. I know that there are lingering effects. And I've been using taste and smell as my metric to see if people are getting better. But if you want to know the natural history of an illness, you have to watch it. And I think there's going to be a different natural history in different groups of people, and also based on whether you had Alpha, Delta, or Omicron, which variant infected you. I don't think we've seen a new strain at this point. I think they're all similar enough, and the symptoms are similar enough that we'll get a general sense of it, but I don't know.
Yeah, you're right. We're all in the same boat, I think, at this time, right? Everybody is kind of watching and waiting to see where next this virus is taking us. But Doctor, thank you so much for taking the time to call in from Israel on your vacation. And what's next for you? Because we have 30 seconds. Are you going back to teaching or back to practicing when you come back, or what are you doing?
I do not know. I will be transitioning into something, but I think Omicron has given us pause to say, what do I really like about life? What really matters? And I think it's a crisis can have good points. So I'm in that phase now of deciding which way to go.
All right. Well, you know, you're welcome to come and see Dr. Begee's farm anytime you make it to Brevard. Come down and get some fresh
good
eggs.
Stuff.
Thank you.
All right. Thanks, Doc.
Thank you, everyone, for the entire year of support on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends, from Samantha Nazario, myself, Ellen O'Neill, and, of course, our wonderful host, Sita Begee. Thank you so much. And a big wish for Sita's birthday as well. Happy birthday, Sita.
And happy new year. And thank you, Paul.
Yep.
Thank you, Tyler, for coming in today.
Again, tune in each and every Monday at 1 o'clock Eastern Time here on WWBC 1510 AM.
The preceding program may not necessarily reflect the views of the staff or management of WWBC.